You're listening to Web Talk at WebTalkRadio.com for the week of January 15th, 2004. And my name is Rob Greenlee. Thank you for downloading and streaming the show. We keep you plugged into the latest net trends and some future net predictions this week.
Hey, Rob, this is Dana Greenlee. Thanks so much for joining us. We have a special show this week. We want to cover a little bit of news and an amazing show coming up.
Yeah, actually, podcasting, which is something we've talked a lot about on the show over the last few weeks, is going to get its own expo. It's an exposition down in Southern California on November 10th through the 12th in Ontario, California. So if you want to go check it out, if you maybe want to attend, if you happen to have a desire to get into podcasting, you can go visit podcastexpo.com and go check it out.
Google has a mini. What is that?
Google has rolled out these like search appliances. It's basically a 2U server in the past, but what they've come out with is a Google Mini, which I thought was kind of an interesting name, considering what's just happened here recently with Apple rolling out their little mini iPod. But anyway, for about $4,900, you can get your own little Google installed in your corporate network. You can go to Google and check it out. It's basically a search appliance that can search up to about 50,000 documents on your network.
A few weeks ago, we mentioned a very popular Flash video presentation on the web. It gives a very interesting glimpse into the future of online news media they predict out into the year 2014. This Flash video predicts things like the New York Times may be going offline and involves possible future outcomes for companies like Google and Microsoft and Amazon, and how they may possibly get all gobbled up by other companies and or merge into each other. The predictions made by this Flash video could happen possibly in the year 2014 if we stay on the same track as we are today.
This Flash presentation is driving huge traffic numbers to the sites that are hosting it, and it was made by Robin Sloan and Matt Thompson, who did the deep, dark voiceover for the Flash presentation. And Matt will join us later in the show to talk about the presentation in more depth and talk about their predictions for the future.
We're going to play for you this presentation. It's from the Museum of Media History, and it's a 8-minute Flash video transmission from the year 2014. Why don't you give it a listen?
It is the best of times. It is the worst of times. In the year 2014, people have access to a breadth and depth of information unimaginable in an earlier age. Everyone contributes in some way. Everyone participates to create a living, breathing mediascape. However, the press as you know it has ceased to exist. The Fourth Estate's fortunes have waned. 20th century news organizations are an afterthought, a lonely remnant of a not too distant past. The road to 2014 began in the mid-20th century. In 1989, Tim Berners-Lee, a computer scientist at the CERN Particle Physics Laboratory in Switzerland, invents the World Wide Web. 1994 sees the founding of Amazon.com. Its young creator dreams of a store that sells everything. Amazon's model, which would come to set the standard for internet sales, is built on automated, personalized recommendations, a store that can make suggestions. In 1998, two Stanford programmers create Google. Their algorithm echoes the logic of Amazon. It treats links as recommendations, and from that foundation powers the world's most effective search engine. In 1999, TiVo transforms television by unshackling it from the constraints of time and commercials. Almost no one who tries it ever goes back. That year, a dot-com startup named Pyra Labs unveils Blogger, a personal publishing tool. Friendster launches in 2002, and hundreds of thousands of young people rush to populate it with an incredibly detailed map of their lives, their interests, and their social networks. Also in 2002, Google launches Google News, a news portal. News organizations cry foul. Google News is edited entirely by computers. In 2003, Google buys Blogger. Google's plans are a mystery, but their interest in Blogger is not unreasonable. 2003 is the year of the blog. 2004 would be remembered as the year that everything began. Reason Magazine sends subscribers an issue with a satellite photo of their houses on the cover and information custom-tailored to each subscriber inside. Sony and Philips unveil the world's first mass-produced electronic paper. Google unveils Gmail with a gigabyte of free space for every user. Microsoft unveils NewsBot, a social news filter. Amazon unveils A9, a search engine built on Google's technology that also incorporates Amazon's trademark recommendations. And then, Google goes public. Awash in new capital, the company makes a major acquisition. Google buys TiVo. 2005. In response to Google's recent moves, Microsoft buys Friendster. 2006. Google combines all of its services, TiVo, Blogger, Gmail, Google News, and all of its searches into the Google Grid, a universal platform that provides a functionally limitless amount of storage space and bandwidth to store and share media of all kinds, always online, accessible from anywhere. Each user selects her own level of privacy. She can store her content securely on the Google Grid or publish it for all to see. It has never been easier for anyone, everyone, to create as well as consume media. 2007. Microsoft responds to Google's mounting challenge with NewsBotster, a social news network and participatory journalism platform. NewsBotster ranks and sorts news based on what each user's friends and colleagues are reading and viewing, and it allows everyone to comment on what they see. Sony's e-paper is cheaper than real paper this year. It's the medium of choice for NewsBotster. 2008 sees the alliance that will challenge Microsoft's ambitions. Google and Amazon join forces to form GoogleZone. Google supplies the Google Grid, an unparalleled search technology. Amazon supplies a social recommendation engine and its huge commercial infrastructure. Together, they use their detailed knowledge of every user's social network, demographics, consumption habits, and interests to provide total customization of content and advertising. The news wars of 2010 are notable for the fact that no actual news organizations take part. GoogleZone finally checkmates Microsoft with a feature the software giant cannot match. Using a new algorithm, GoogleZone's computers construct news stories dynamically, stripping sentences and facts from all content sources and recombining them. The computer writes a news story for every user. In 2011, the slumbering Fourth Estate awakes to make its first and final stand. The New York Times Company sues GoogleZone, claiming that the company's fact-stripping robots are a violation of copyright law. The case goes all the way to the Supreme Court, which, on August 4th, 2011, decides in favor of GoogleZone. On Sunday, March 9th, 2014, GoogleZone unleashes Epic. Welcome to our world. The evolving, personalized information construct is the system by which our sprawling, chaotic mediascape is filtered, ordered, and delivered. Everyone contributes now, from blog entries to phone cam images to video reports to full investigations. Many people get paid, too. A tiny cut of Google's immense advertising revenue, proportional to the popularity of their contributions. Epic produces a custom content package for each user, using his choices, his consumption habits, his interests, his demographics, his social network, to shape the product. A new generation of freelance editors has sprung up, people who sell their ability to connect, filter, and prioritize the contents of Epic. We all subscribe to many editors. Epic allows us to mix and match their choices however we like. At its best, edited for the savviest readers, Epic is a summary of the world, deeper, broader, and more nuanced than anything ever available before. But at its worst, and for too many, Epic is merely a collection of trivia, much of it untrue, all of it narrow, shallow, and sensational. But Epic is what we wanted, it is what we chose, and its commercial success preempted any discussions of media and democracy or journalistic ethics. Today, in 2014, the New York Times has gone offline. In feeble protest to Google's on hegemony, the Times has become a print-only newsletter for the elite and the elderly. But perhaps there was another way.
Well, Dana, that was a really interesting presentation. And up next after the break, we're going to actually speak with Matt Thompson, who actually did the voiceover for the Flash presentation that you just listened to. And he's going to tell us all the behind the scenes. This is Web Talk Radio. Welcome back to Web Talk Radio, webtalkradio.com, and my name is Rob Greenlee, and Dana Greenlee's in here. Would you go check out our Web Talk blog on our site and sign up for our podcast feed that we have on there. You can actually get our MP3 file delivered directly to your computer or your mobile player. And you can also go check out our blog RSS feed from our site as well, so you can keep up to date with what's going on with the Web Talk guys.
Well, joining us right now on the telephone is Matt Thompson. He did the brilliant voiceover in the epic 2014 Flash presentation you just heard in the previous segment. Matt's also a web producer and a reporter at the Fresno Bee in Fresno, California. Matt made this epic prediction Flash video presentation with Robin Sloan, a web producer at NTV. It's a new independent cable TV network. Now, in the first segment of the show, you heard that Flash presentation gave a very interesting glimpse into the future of online news media in 2014. The Flash video predicts things like the New York Times eventually going offline and involves possible future outcomes of companies such as Google and Amazon and Microsoft merging into a form called Googlezon and Google creating the Google Grid and then creating Epic in 2014. And it also talks about how Microsoft acquires Friendster and gobbles up other companies and merges into each other. The predictions made by this Flash video could happen in about 10 years if we stay on the same track as we are today.
Matt, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Rob.
Well, I wanted to talk to you about your cool little Flash presentation that you put together that seems to be making the rounds. You and Robin Sloan actually put this video Flash presentation and that talks about the future of Google and Microsoft and Amazon and kind of the news media's future. Why don't you kind of run through kind of the premise that you guys came up with and why did you guys make this thing?
All right. Well, the premise is that in 2014, given all the things that have been going on in the media, all the trends that have been taking place, people's media consumption habits, and the patterns of various corporations and businesses and websites, mm-hmm. as far as the consumption of media goes, what this portends for the future of the media, what's happened mm-hmm. in 2014, what this all spins out to. The conceit of the movie is that we are messengers from the future or from the present,
yeah.
whichever way you want to look at it,
sure.
Describing exactly how the 2014 media situation mm-hmm. has come to pass.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of a dystopian vision of what is happening to the media in 2014.
Yeah, so it's like an evolutionary thing from where we are today in 2004. It kind of extrapolates out some projections and some visions of what could happen out there. Why don't you kind of run through some of those key events that happen over the timeline?
Well, it starts in 1989 with Tim Berners-Lee bringing us the World Wide Web.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes through Google's acquisition of Blogger. It goes through the creation of Amazon and
mm-hmm.
The popularity of Friendster. It then steps a little bit into past 2004
mm-hmm.
when Google and Microsoft have kind of started up a bigger rivalry than they have today.
Mm-hmm.
And they've begun taking on the media corporations as well with some of their products. Google ultimately trumps Microsoft by teaming up with Amazon.com and uniting all of its services into the Google Grid,
mm-hmm.
which allows people to basically combine all of their media into one source and customize that however they'd like.
Mm-hmm. Of course, this new conglomerate is now called...
And the conglomerite is called Google's On.
That's a cool name. I like that.
Yeah, that was a over-the-top touch. The presentation, as it began, had very many more. It was much longer, for one thing. It was probably a few minutes longer.
Oh.
And it had more of those kind of slices of tongue-in-cheek humor that I don't know translate so well when the context isn't there.
Aww.
But Google's On kind of trumps Microsoft ultimately by providing this service, Epic, which allows fact-stripping robots to plunge through news stories, collecting sentences and recombining
mm-hmm.
them into news stories to suit every user. This ends up creating a fantastically customized media universe where people can get just exactly the news they want, exactly the way they want it. It
what?
Knows every user, and every user can edit the news how they please.
It certainly seems like that's the direction that things are going. There's no question.
I think it's definitely not going to play out exactly the way that we described it. But I think that given what's happening now with the way people are consuming media, that
mm-hmm.
every time people are faced with the choice of, are we going to take media the way corporations have always delivered it, or are we going to use our own individual choices to affect how we get media and what media we get, they choose the latter road. When given the choice between sitting down and watching, say, a news broadcast as it's delivered, half an hour commercial breaks when you get them, or, say, TiVoing a news broadcast
mm-hmm.
and watching it when they want, with whatever commercials they want to watch,
mm-hmm.
the figures show that they choose TiVo over the
oh,
old
yeah.
and busted television route.
Yeah, and it seems like we're all becoming kind of content publishers, and I think that's kind of an extension of what you're really talking about with this is that there's going to be millions of people that are going to be contributing to this Google Grid, you know, and making content available, whether it be audio, video, pictures. I mean, I think we're all starting to see this, you know, the mobile blog concept, I think, is a sign of that happening. What's your thought?
That's actually a big part of it as well, that people are now meeting these organizations halfway. Not only Friendster, and the reason we included Friendster, one of the reasons that we included Friendster in this whole thing, I don't actually imagine that Friendster is going to play a gigantic role in the media future to come, but I think that it does portend some interesting things, that people are willing to enter just scads of information about themselves into the
oh, yeah.
database. Just
alarmingly so.
Definitely. Just for the convenience of having their friends have access to that information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and certainly a combination of Google and Amazon certainly makes sense too, because Google's working on their whole Frugal, which is basically an e-commerce engine, but Amazon's got the best one on the planet. So
right.
I certainly see potentially them combining together. I know Amazon's got a lot of debt right now. That would be the only thing that I could see where Google might look at them and go, ooh, do I want to take on that much debt? But things could change over the years.
There's already been a little bit of crossover, and we mentioned this somewhat in the movie. There's already been a little bit of crossover between Google and Amazon and their various functions. Amazon earlier unveiled a search engine called the A9 search engine, which is integrated with Amazon's catalog. It actually delivers results from the web, from the Amazon catalog, and delivers these two in a way that people can customize.
Yeah, that's certainly true. And I also like your thought on the News Botster piece to this, that that Microsoft might have an interest in acquiring Friendster. And really, if you look at Microsoft, that's one of their really glaring weaknesses is social networking and that whole thing.
You know, Google and Microsoft kind of approach information from two different directions. Google has very much been interested in the acquisition of information itself, and Microsoft has been more about controlling people's access to that information. I doubt that Microsoft would acquire something like Friendster, but I do think that they're going to take a lot of cues from Google in the years to come. I mean, just this week, Google has announced their initiative to digitize the collections of various universities, Michigan and my alma mater. And I think that Microsoft has got to be realizing right now that they might be losing out on the information game, on just the possession of this scads of data.
We're in the middle of a conversation with Matt Thompson. He's the voice behind the epic 2014 Flash presentation, along with Robin Sloan. More with Matt in a moment. You're listening to Web Talk Radio.
We'll do it again, over.
Welcome back to Web Talk Radio, webtalkradio.com. I'm Rob Greenlee.
And this is Dana. And still with us is Matt Thompson. He's the voice behind Epic 2014. It's a Flash presentation looking at the way media will be treated in the future.
The concept that you put out there about the Google Grid is really interesting, too, because if you look at Google and what they're doing, you know, with their different services that they have out there, the Frugal and the Gmails and all these different services that really need to be pulled under one umbrella, really ultimately, and I see that ultimately is where they're going. Was that kind of what you were thinking, is that Google is pretty spread out right now and they need to kind of consolidate everything under one umbrella?
I actually think, I can't help but think that all of Google's acquisitions are undergirded by some very solid objectives that Google executives probably talk about in the most sacred of secrecy. But they have survived on an astonishing amount of goodwill until now, I think, and they will continue to, and I think the way they've dealt with the information that they've collected, they deserve the goodwill they've gotten so far. The reason that people don't kind of automatically, instinctively distrust Google as much as they would, say, a Microsoft, is because so many of Google's acquisitions so far have been kept separate from each other. It's not immediately obvious when you go to Google.com that the site you're on holds all of the Usenet postings from since the beginning of that, holds all of this scholarly research, all of these blog entries, and just all of this information about people.
Yeah, so when they kind of pull it all together, there's a danger that that those guys could be perceived as a little bit more of a risk to the user.
Right. All of a sudden, Google becomes something monolithic, much more monolithic than we think of it right now. Right now, we think of Google as a blank page with a friendly little form on it.
Yeah, that's true. And when the Google Grid is a concept that would change that. I mean, there's no question pulling all those pieces together. And I think the premise that you talked about was that there'd be certain areas within Google that you could make information public, and other areas you could make things private. So,
right.
Is that part of that?
That is definitely. I mean, I think that allowing people to display as much or as little about themselves has got to be built into the system.
Because it isn't in there right now, really, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
This project developed initially as an exercise for journalists, for creators of media. I think the very first time that we gave a presentation that would ultimately come to be EPIC, it was to a group of journalism professors.
Oh, interesting.
At colleges.
Oh. Okay.
And initially it was based around the thought of how can the news industry, how can journalists realize the media future that's taking shape and bring their values and their expertise to bear on what's ultimately going to come to be. So initially we gave much, much less dystopian ideas about what's happening. And in encouraging journalists to see what's going on, see how people are consuming media, and, you know, what they're offering, what people are willing to give as, in terms of their information, is so that they can use that to create a better product. You know, we presented this to editors and, as I mentioned, professors, to news directors and what have you. And the conversation was always kind of getting stuck on this idea that, you know, people would never abandon our newspapers.
Oh, yeah.
Our beautiful agate type for all of this digital wizardry that you parade before us. And
they could very easily abandon it. You know, your whole premise in here at the end of it is that the New York Times goes offline.
Right.
That's like, you know, a bellwether that this could happen. You know, that's what you guys are saying in this.
Well, when we began to present this to journalists, to present it in this form, when we created EPIC the movie, which is due very much in part, I should say, to Robin's flash wizardry and our friend Aaron's music.
And your voice.
And your voice, yes.
And then my voice is the component. It's like the Power Rangers. But when we started presenting this to journalists, we said, okay, if this is how the future takes shape, you know, the movie ends, if you'll recall, on a kind of odd note without context. It says, but it didn't have to be this way or something to that effect.
Well, you're getting people to think about it, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
And when we presented it, we would begin by showing this movie, and we would follow up with that by saying, you know, all right, we've told you that this is the future. Now, how are you going to either answer this future through the moves of your journalism organization or accept this future?
Yeah. It's your choice, right?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And that's when a lot more thinking started bubbling up. And we decided, hey, you know, if we're getting some good thoughts from journalists, then, you know, how much better thoughts could we get from the rest of the world?
Yeah, it certainly could be looked at as a scenario that isn't probably what we all want necessarily, but it's possible that, you know, that some of the things that you're talking about in this flash video could come to pass. And I think the question that you're posing is whether or not that future is one that we want or not.
In making this, I think probably both Robin and I, although I wouldn't want to speak for Robin, I have wavered back and forth a trillion times over whether or not I would like EPIC. I think that I would love the product personally. I mean, being able to designate whomever I want to be my editor, you know, having a product that just brings me every day things from, basically, you know, your newspaper is edited by a few select individuals.
Well, it's personalized news, what you're talking about.
Right.
Yeah.
And this is edited by whoever you'd like it to be, which I think on the one hand is very powerful and on the other hand is very dangerous.
Well, I think that's kind of what we're doing with blogs right now, too. I think that a lot of people are looking at a core group of people that basically edit the information that's online and publish it in their weblogs.
Right.
Just John Stewart,
yeah.
You know, on the Daily
Well,
show.
Yeah.
We'll just take his point of view.
We've always relied on editors to filter information and news. There's no question. I guess it's having too many choices, I guess, is maybe where the obstacle is. And some, you know, maybe we make a poor choice.
And I hope that there can be provisions built into the system when ultimately media breaks down to the point where people can get a product that is tailored almost automatically to their choices.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that there can be provisions built in that bring us out beyond our own little narrow worlds.
Yeah.
And I think that there can.
Mm-hmm.
One of the questions that prompted this movie, the discussion between Robin and I actually happened in a bar in South Beach in February.
It's a good place to have an argument.
Yeah, it was a pretty good discussion.
We were Don't tell me. It was a cocktail napkin involved.
There was no cocktail napkin. We both fortunately had good enough memories and that we could remember it without the aid of cocktail napkins.
Yeah.
The question, I think, that really started to churn the thinking in our heads was prompted by Martin Nisenholtz. He's the CEO of New York Times Digital.
Mm-hmm.
He'd given a rather opaque speech, and Robin and I disagreed as to what the meaning of it was. But he included one very interesting tidbit about Ultima Online. And that led us to the question, you know, what is a medium that you can change merely by participating in it? That by the mere act of consuming the medium, mm-hmm. you create it. You form it. And online multiplayer games struck us as a pretty good answer to that question.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And how could that model be applied to journalism? How could you create a mediascape merely by the act of consuming it? That's what ultimately led us to the idea of Epic.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that registers your preferences, that you contribute to with information, but also in the mere act of reading, watching, listening.
We're in the middle of a conversation with Matt Thompson. He's the voice behind the Epic 2014 Flash presentation, along with Robin Sloan. More with Matt in a moment. You're listening to Web Talk Radio.
Caroline talks to you softly sometimes. She says I love you in too much. She doesn't have anything you want to steal.
Yeah, man, I tell you what, that dang old internet, man, you just go on there and point and click, get in there and talk about www.com, you got them naked chicks on there, man, you go click, 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 it's real easy, man.
Get your dot-com drama, your startup, crash and burn report, your high-tech hoopla right here, right now on the Web Talk Guys World Radio Show.
Welcome back to Web Talk Radio, webtalkradio.com. I'm Rob Greenlee.
And this is Dana. And still with us is Matt Thompson. He's the voice behind Epic 2014. It's a flash presentation looking at the way media will be treated in the future. Once again, you can find this presentation at robinsloan.com/epic. Well, now you mentioned that a lot of, before I think the interview, you mentioned a lot of places are mirroring the site. But just as we come up in our last few minutes, why don't you tell us, first of all, what kind of feedback you're getting, and then also where anybody can go to see this wonderful presentation, the movie.
All right. The feedback has been tremendously interesting. One of the funny things that I've noted is in speaking to journalists, the thinking would often kind of stop and shut down at the point where it's like, you know, we don't want this product. This is not the media that we've come to know and love and create.
Yeah.
And it would kind of often stop at just the point where people said, you know, well, people don't really want that. People don't want to be just given their own choices and allowed to run willy-nilly with it.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly enough, on the internet, where we're encountering folks who are in contact with all of these trends day after day, who know this stuff in and out, you know, much better than I do, for example. One common response is, well, you know, the technology just can't play out in exactly this way, that Friendster is not going to be the media corporation of the future and what have you. But a lot of people have taken... First of all, a lot of people, I think, have found both the good and the evil in Epic,
mm-hmm.
The possibilities for each. And a lot of people have said, you know, how can we create a world that incorporates both, a media world that incorporates both the dystopian and utopian elements of this?
Mm-hmm.
How can we create a world that... that takes the good stuff and incorporates some rules for keeping it good.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's probably the thing that I learned most. I mean, when we started off giving this presentation to journalists, it was with the thought that journalists would be the ones that, you know, would want to put safeguards into the system, would want to make this ethical, would want to make it informationally sound. But really hearing the responses of people who aren't journalists, you know, everyone wants the best mediascape possible, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I think everyone is as afraid as I am that, you know, left to our own devices, without putting in the proper foresight into a system like this, you know, our choices could be myopic.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think there's certainly, you know, some validity in what this video projects into the future. I mean, of the direction. I mean, if you look at where we're at right now and how people are consuming media and creating media, I can kind of see how all those pieces kind of fit together. You know, we don't talk about the details of it necessarily because the details aren't important. What's important is kind of the ultimate direction and where this is going to wind up. And it certainly, having media consolidated and having us as citizens contributing to that is something that I think is going to happen. I'm a little skeptical of the New York Times ever going offline myself, just
right.
Because I just don't,
as am I.
don't see that actually ever happening or any other media, even though that there's some possibility that there could be some significant consolidation that happens in the future.
And already I think the many people who viewed it on the internet that not a single person has pointed out that Google has not yet bought TiVo.
Yeah, well, there's been a lot of discussion about Google getting involved in a lot of media and digital media and indexing it and doing with TV shows and all
and
sorts of stuff.
I rule out no possibility. Yeah. However, you know, I'd caution people in watching the movie against taking it too
seriously. Yeah,
there's,
sure.
Our tongue is very firmly in cheek for many of the developments that we described happening in the future.
But what it does is it sparks conversation, and that's
what we intended to do and hope to do.
Sure.
And we're thrilled that it's happening.
Yeah.
As far as where people can get it, the second part of your question, at robinsloan.com/epic, he's keeping up a pretty well updated list of the various mirrors out there that exist.
Okay.
And Sloan is Sloan. No,
yes.
.com.
Yes.
Okay.
Now, have you guys looked at making this video available, or is it possible to make it available as like a BitTorrent download or something like that?
We have thought about different formats that people might better appreciate it in. Some folks have had problem with streaming and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And the BitTorrent idea is a good one. So I think we're going to get together a little bit in January and see that we might not spread the love a little more.
We would love to work with you and help you with that BitTorrent distribution if you guys are interested in doing that.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah. So, you know, to get the word out on this, because I'd love to spark more conversation about this, because I think it brings up some very important points.
Definitely. Well, thank you.
You know, about our media future, because I think right now it's what we make it at this point.
Exactly. And what I want is for us to have the foresight to build the good stuff into the final product.
Yeah, that's great.
Thank you so much, Matt.
Thanks, Matt. Yeah. All right.
Definitely want to keep in touch.
Well, now, how would a person find out a little bit more information about you? Do you have a blog or anything like that? Or
Robin and I actually keep a blog together. It's called Snark Market, and you can find that at snarkmarket.com.
Okay.
Robin's personal website is robinsloan.com. My personal website is mthomps.com, M-T-H-O-M-P-S.
Mm-hmm.
You can reach either of us by email. Mine is matt@snarkmarket.com and Robin's is robin@snarkmarket.com.
Okay, cool.
Thank you. Do you want that last part to be included in the interview with your email?
Sure.
Okay, all right. Okay. We'll just make sure that is.
That's great. Well, Matt, thank you for joining us on the show. It's great to speak with you.
Thank you for having me.
And we're definitely going to keep an eye on your video and keep us up to date with how that thing develops.
I certainly will.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks, all right.
Matt.
Take care.
You too.
Hey, Matt. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
We've been speaking with Matt Thompson. Matt is the voice of the presentation that you heard at the beginning of the show. Once again, you can find this presentation at robinsloan.com/epic. That's all the time we have for the show this week. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for joining us and spending some time with Web Talk.
So as Rob said, we bring you the latest views on what's happening around the internet and the web. We want to focus on those topics, and we need your voice as well. Please let us know some of your thoughts, your comments, and your questions. You can email Rob at robg@webtalkguys.com. Myself, Dana, D-A-N-A, @webtalkguys.com. We want to hear from you. And even if you want to, hop on a little microphone and send us an audio commentary. Well, this is your show, so we would love to have that as well.
And we look forward to having you back listening to us next week. So go check us out at our website at webtalkradio.com. And we list on there coming topics and all of our past archive. We'll see you around the net.
Thank you for downloading the Web Talk Guys. Bookmark us now for next week. Same Web Talk Guys time, same Web Talk Guys channel.